Blog Talk Radio.
Keep
Well, you're certainly experiencing the kind of situation that is perfect for medication.
Welcome to Cowboy Wisdom Radio on the Bee Wisdom Radio Network and the SOP Radio Network. I am Rob Wilson. I am a hypnotherapist with Cowboy Wisdom NLP Coaching. Tonight, my guest is Montgomery Granger. He's a retired major in the military. Mr. Granger was assigned to as a medical service officer responsible for the care and treatment of detainees in both Iraq and in Guantanamo Bay. And tonight we're going to discuss the Guantanamo Bay and Iraq. And without any further ado, I want to welcome Montgomery to the show. This is an honor and a privilege, and I want to thank you for your service to help protecting us all. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Robert. I really appreciate it, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to speak with you and your listeners. And the pleasure is all mine. And I thank you, sir, for your loyal patriotism.
And I would really like to just start out with everybody. Tell people kind of what you was doing in Guantanamo Bay and in Iraq with detainees and some of the little bit you saw.
Yeah, I was activated on 9/11, reported to duty at the 800th MP Brigade headquarters in Uniondale, New York. That's on Long Island. Was the only United States Army POW, or EPW as we call it, enemy prisoner of war unit, in the inventory. Like many service and combat service support units, the active duty doesn't need many of them unless there's a war. We were told after several weeks that we would be going to stand up the mission at Guantanamo Bay, and we'd be getting there late January or early February. As it turned out, we got there in February 2002, several weeks after the first group of detainees arrived. And basically, we used a facility that was constructed for isolation in the several years before that, the Haitian boat people situation, where many of those folks found themselves at Guantanamo Bay. They were in groups, and the troublemakers were put in these cells, which we ended up using at a place called Camp X-Ray, pretty much dog kennels, about 7 foot by 7 foot, slab of concrete, chain link fence, gravel all around, and very good security. We were told by Donald Rumsfeld himself when we hit the ground that even though the Al-Qaeda and Taliban prisoners, or rather detainees, were not entitled to the protections of Geneva Convention because they were unlawful combatants, we would treat them within the spirit of Geneva Conventions, and that's exactly what we did on a daily basis. So it was pretty intense. We had trained for this mission. In fact, many of the folks that I was activated with from the 800th MP Brigade had seen action and had experience in detention operations from the first Gulf War back in 91, when we were literally overwhelmed by Iraqi prisoners. And those were legitimate prisoners of war because they carried their weapons openly. The country was a signatory to the conventions. They wore uniforms, did not target civilians, et cetera. And the opposite is the case with the Al-Qaeda detainees, Taliban. And many of the detainees we encountered, Robert, were mercenaries, soldiers of fortune. Maybe 23-some nationalities represented just in the first approximately 250 detainees, one of them quite famous from Australia, who threatened to kill an American when he got there and was quite violent. And David Hicks is his name. This just to give one example of someone who was not used to being incarcerated, but also was someone who was in Afghanistan to make some money, even though he's not quick to admit that.
And, you know, that's the thing. With the mercenaries, how can you really How can you really treat them as a prisoner of war because they're a soldier of fortune to make money? What is really the difference between a soldier, they're fighting for their country, a mercenary is fighting for money? So how do they differ, and how did you treat them different or the same?
Well, we treated them all the same. A prisoner of war is a very high status. It means you meet all the criteria necessary to earn that designation. Emphasis on the word earn. What many people don't realize, Robert, is that when someone is captured on the battlefield, which all these detainees were captured on the battlefield, if there is doubt about your status, i.e., is this person a civilian? Is this person a protected person, i.e., a doctor? Is this person a prisoner of war? Well, you look at the circumstances where they're carrying the arms openly, where they're in uniform. Were they hiding out in a church? Were they holding school children hostage? You know, what were the circumstances? If any of that is in doubt, what their status is, an immediate tribunal is held at the detention facility in country to determine that person's status. And that happened to some of these folks, and that was never advertised or put out there. And it's a tribunal that is held, usually takes less than a few hours. And you have three Army officers, and the majority rules. If they determine that the person is an unlawful combatant, then they're sent to Guantanamo Bay. If they were deemed to be a potential intelligence asset, they were sent to Guantanamo Bay. And I want to contrast that, Robert, with what usually happens on the other side. If they capture one of us, they have this habit of detaching their head from their body slowly and putting that on videotape. That is the opposite of what we do with detainees. We treat them with dignity and respect and within the spirit of the Geneva Conventions, even if they don't earn that status.
You know, it's kind of an ethical and an honor above this immorality. You know, that's something that's always kind of really edged at the edge of my mind. They say them extremists or whatever, they always are saying within Allah or whatever, but yet they're some of the most cruelest people in the world. And that's something that's always just kind of bewildered me. But I understand it's their subliminal landscape. Montgomery, to me, we're fighting a subconscious enemy because it's an ingrained pattern, and that's all they understand. But when you was down in Guantanamo, what was some of the things that was done that you thought were really ethical and unethical done by us?
Well, as I've said before on radio and television, that there were some abuse. I didn't witness the abuse, although some detainees who are now free claim that some of the things I saw was abuse. Let's give you an example. Let's say one of the detainees is upset with their guard or upset with life in general. In the beginning at Camp X-Ray, and remember Camp X-Ray was just open from February to April, and then we put them in the upgraded facility where they are now in Camp Delta. Let's say he was having a bad day. They had, in the early days, they had buckets where they would put their feces and urine. If he was having a bad day, he might throw that on a guard. He might refuse to assume the position, which is on your knees, back to the gate, hands behind your head. If you had to travel in and out to take a shower or exercise, that detainee may, as soon as the guard comes through the gate to shackle him, turn around and sucker punch him. In that case, they would call the Internal Reaction Force in, which is about five of the biggest guys you can think of in baseball catcher's gear, and they put them down in hog time for a few hours. And all of that is legal. That's within the Geneva Conventions, and the Army version of Geneva, which is called the Law of Land Warfare, and that's Field Manual 27-10, and that's all in there. Those things would happen, I wouldn't say frequently, but not infrequently in the early days until we established control and let them understand that they needed to follow the rules. On the other hand, on the cover of my book, you can see plainly a United States Marine taking great care and caution in helping a detainee who was in the holding area prior to in-processing take a sip of water. There are many such instances of what I call saving grace. One of my heroes there was a physical therapist, a female medic with the Navy or corpsman, and her job was to work with unshackled detainees who were being rehabbed basically from their war wounds in the detention hospital, which I visited on a daily basis and had to write reports on to my supervisor. This young woman would stand inches away and sometimes help manipulate the limbs of murderers and terrorists. And even though she had an MP a heartbeat away, this individual, this detainee, could have easily caused her great harm if he so chose. And it was impressive to see her day after day after day coming in there, working with the worst of the worst, and taking it all in stride. It was very impressive.
And Montgomery's book is Saving Grace at Guantanamo Bay, a Warrior's Memoir, and it's available at Amazon and where else?
Barnes and Noble. It's also a Kindle version. It's been selling quite well, and in some local bookstores that I've had the pleasure of visiting and doing events with. When I do an event, I give a short talk and then question and answer. I have about a 15-minute PowerPoint with some photos never before seen, personal photos from my time at Guantanamo Bay. And I signed some books and have a great time. The next one, if I may, is going to be in the town of Huntington at the great bookstore there. It's called Book Review. And that's going to be Memorial Day weekend on Saturday night, May 28th, from 7 to 10 p.m. And I hope any of your listeners within shouting distance of the North Shore of Long Island can make it there.
And are you available for speeches and things like that?
I am, but the caveat there is I have a full-time job. I'm a school district administrator on the eastern end of Long Island, happily married for over 25 years to my bride, and we have 5 children. So I did rush home from a Little League game to make this phone call. So in between things, if it's on a weekend, I'd be more than happy to consider going on the road, especially if it's closer to New York.
And, you know, there's something you said in there that really I don't think gets expressed enough to people. You was talking about that young lady who was a physical therapist.
Mm-hmm.
There's something I pay close attention to what the ground troops do because, you know, they go in with the fancy air stuff, but it still takes the ground troops to go in there. But in Afghanistan, the ground troops are actually starting to converse with the people and actually starting to make headway. And that's what a lot of people don't understand, I feel. And I want to get your opinion of this. People don't understand that the ground troops just don't fight war. They also start the peace process, don't you feel?
They do. And it's interesting you said that because I had an encounter in Iraq when I was inspecting one of the tent city camps we had at Abu Ghraib prison. This was after the scandal. They sent my unit in to try and clean things up. And I would go in with the guard, and we would not be armed, and we'd be walking amongst hundreds of detainees, and we would check on their food and ask them how the latrines were, how the showers, inspect the tents. And one gentleman approached me, claimed to be one of Saddam's generals, and he locked eyeballs with me, Robert, and he said, you know, in his thick accent, but he spoke fairly good English, you have an opportunity here to show the best of who Americans are and to make a good impression. And that stuck with me. What also stuck with me was while I was at Abu Ghraib prison on a weekly basis, the two gentlemen from the Iraqi Department of Human Rights would come in and visit the prison, and I would escort them around. And the first time I did that, Robert, on our way out, They both, again, locked eyeballs with me, and they said, thank you so much for putting your life on the line for us. We're so very grateful that you and America has come here to free us. And I'll never forget that they were very sensitive, grateful people. Yes, they want to be on their own, but it was those kinds of encounters that reminded me of what you just talked about. The other thing briefly I'd like to say is that if your listeners haven't read Three Cups of Tea by Greg Mortensen and the follow-up to that book, which I think is even more poignant, From Stones into Schools, is about an American philanthropist who worked with military personnel in Afghanistan to build schools where there might have been madrasas just for boys. Now there are schools for girls. And making friends, drinking three cups of tea means you're a family member with someone from that part of Afghanistan. And that's what we need to do more of, help them with their infrastructure, show them who we are as the most generous people on the planet.
And the call-in number is 626-414-3564 for anybody who's got a question for Montgomery. And see, that's the thing. The little things like that is what we don't hear over here because the media, for some reason, but you was talking about, and that's the only way. You just hit on how we're going to ever expand out of terrorism and war is we got to show the people a way to create prosperity in their country through themselves. And that's something they've never been taught is how to energize prosperity, not money, but prosperity. And that's where this all opened up. And is that what you seen when you was over there, Montgomery, or what did you see about that?
Yeah, I saw it absolutely on a smaller scale than I think came later. I was over there in from December 2004 to approximately October 2005, which is a very violent time. But I got to see, the MP brigade, the military police brigade, doing business with local vendors, with local business people, because that was the philosophy, that we would go over there and we wouldn't just give all the money to Halliburton and let them do everything. We had to first seek out a local contractor. So I got to meet some of these folks and see how business was done and how happy they were to do business with us, what it meant to them to, you know, help their own people, knowing that we were behind them, not just physically, but economically. And I think it's one of the myths, one of the many myths, is that after we went in, things were worse. Very shortly after we got in there, we began infrastructure projects that saw, I'd say by 2006, a standard of living that the average Iraqi person had never seen before. And it just has grown since then.
And see, that's the thing. When you can show, and what we're really trying to overcome over there and expand them out of is a warish and poverty-ish DNA and a subconscious mindset that of they have to use force to have wealth and success over there, and they have to maintain it. Would you say that's kind of what we're over there doing? And with what we have to do to really expand them countries into prosperity?
Sure. I mean, right now today you have U.S. troops in 75 countries. You have CIA in probably over 90, and you have diplomatic security service personnel in over 200 countries worldwide. And that's your calling card. Everywhere there's a United States citizen, working for the government, whether in uniform or not, they represent us and they represent themselves very well. And most people like Americans. Yeah, they really do. Even probably some of the bad guys like us. I found that in Guantanamo and in Iraq, that they were very hungry to engage us in conversation, which we weren't really allowed to do. But they were happy to receive books to read and DVDs to watch. We have a rich culture here as Americans. If you're a friend of America, you will not ever have a better best friend. However, if you want to make enemies with the United States, you will not have a worst enemy. And we tried to be the best friend and show them that we were God-loving and loved liberty and freedom, and were willing to share those opportunities with them.
And the media just reporting the negative, how did that ingrain things over there to make everything to look worse than it really was?
Well, they took maybe less than 1% of the truth and tried to make that into 100% of the reality, which is one of the reasons why I sought to get my journal published as Saving Grace in Guantanamo Bay. I had encounters over there, some of which I write about in my book, where my boss and I, who was in charge of the camp while we were there, we'd be eating chow in a Navy hospital there with CNN in the crawl space. You'd see something like a riot in Camp X-Ray. We'd look at each other and kind of laugh and say, "What riot?" And there were folks over there from certain news outlets, which I mentioned in the book, that if they couldn't get from us what they wanted, they would literally make up the information. They would just make it up. And it just really opened my eyes to the reality of media today is a business. And if a dog bites a man, that's not news. But if a man bites a dog, that's news, whether it's made up or not. And it was very discouraging, but also got me angry to hear all the negative and misinformation about Guantanamo Bay, especially the pictures that you see whenever there's a story. You see these fellows, kneeling down or sitting cross-legged in a holding area where they may have been there for 20 minutes waiting to be processed and taken very good care of while they were in there. That's people's image. And when I talk to people at my book signings, I said, "What is your image of Guantanamo Bay?" And they mentioned that photo. Why you can't keep them in this open space on gravel. And I'd say they were there for maybe 20 minutes tops. And they didn't know. And you know, part of it, you blame the media. And the other part, you blame the lack of good PR on our own part.
You know, Montgomery, for what you just said, you know, there's people in this country getting treated on jobs worse than them guys got treated.
Yes, and if you talk to some of the folks that I got mobilized with, Robert, who work the prisons and jails in this country, they can tell you stories that will curl your teeth about how some inmates are treated. So we basically treat the detainees like gold. And while I was there, we had pet names for them, and it may seem disrespectful to those not in the military, but if you understand what your life is like in the military, it's a little monotonous, so you make things up to make it go a little bit better and faster. And we call them carrots because they arrive very thin in orange jumpsuits. And we call Camp X-Ray the garden. So when we get up in the morning, "What are you doing today?" "I'm going to the garden to take care of the carrots." And it was just, you know, an endearing term that we used because we knew that we had to take good care of them, that we had to make sure that they were treated with dignity and respect. Sometimes that wasn't the case. Very rarely there were instances, Robert, where when I would go down to detention hospital, I'd hear of a military policeman being reassigned, and I'd inquire into it because I had to include that in my daily report. Well, so-and-so MP slapped this detainee on the head and woke him up. This military policeman said something inappropriate. We had a very low, low tolerance level for that kind of thing, and those MPs would be reassigned. We also had difficulty, Robert, between the MPs and the medical personnel in the detention hospital, where the medical personnel were trained, like myself. You don't just heal a wound, you heal the whole person, which means small talk, bedside manner. And this went 180 degrees against what the military policemen were trained, which is not to engage detainees in conversation whatsoever. So we had a conflict that we had to resolve, and it took, debriefings and group sessions and talking about, what each person's job really was to do. The MPs were there to keep us safe, but the medical personnel were there to heal the person because they were less dangerous and less likely to, cause problems if they were treated well.
You heal the mind first, you'll heal the body, because you take the animosity out of it.
Exactly. And that's prison psychology, and that's opposite of what the media would portray. You want to keep them fat and happy. We called them carrots coming in. We called some of them pumpkins going out. Keep them fat and happy. They're less dangerous, which is the whole idea. You want to keep your MP safe. You want to keep your medical personnel safe. So you treat detainees with dignity and respect.
Well, when you treat somebody with dignity and respect, that means you respect yourself, the dignity within you. That's quite omnipotent. And Montgomery, give everybody some wisdom to part with, and I'm going to have Montgomery back because this is very interesting to me. I learned a lot on this show about what I didn't know, and that's the part we have to learn about Afghanistan, Iraq, and every country in the world. It's what we don't know about them.
Yes, we have a struggle going on with Islamist extremists. We don't have a struggle going on against the religion or against the country. There are some radical persons out there who want us dead, and we need to remember that each and every day. And also remember that those who are out there are putting their lives on the line for us each and every day, and that it is an all-volunteer military. And I think we tend to forget that sometimes.
And that's absolutely true. And Montgomery, I've got some questions I need to ask you. I'm an author, and I got some CDs I'd like to give to the injured military, and I just don't know how to do it. So maybe you can hook me up.
I think the Red Cross is a great place to start, the American Red Cross. You could also contact the United Service Organization. We know it as USO.
Okay.
Also, if you look in the government pages, you can donate to your local military base, to the chaplains, and they'll know exactly what to do with it.
All right. Anyway, Montgomery, we'll have you back again. And if the book is Saving Grace at Guantanamo Bay, a warrior's memoir. And I really want to thank all the listeners and you, Montgomery, for being here. And we'll have you back in a month or so if you're willing to come back.
It would be my pleasure. And thank you and God bless you. And I appreciate your kindness and your generosity very much.
Well, you'll get a... You can get the archives of this to pass out when you choose.
That's great.
This
thank you so much.
Well, thank you, and everybody, good night. Tomorrow night, Marla Mace is my guest, and she is the lady that sung the opening of the show. And good night, and thank you, and really thank you, Montgomery, and everybody. Good night.
Thank you, sir. Good night.